Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to meet the St. Paul District of the Army Corps of Engineers to learn about commerce on the river and the importance of the lock and dam system, as well as dredging the river to allow safe navigation. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, almost 30 people a day are killed in drunk driving crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. The Minnesota National Guard relies on the health and fitness of its soldiers and airmen to achieve success. That's why it is important to have a plan in place if you decide to drink alcohol. Rideshare apps like Uber and Lyft are an efficient and affordable way to avoid having to drive while impaired. If that doesn't work for you, be sure to have a sober driver on call to take you home. And if all else fails, be prepared to sleep on a couch or floor. That's a better alternative than spending the night in jail. If you have to ask yourself if you're okay to drive, you already know the answer. Please don't drink and drive.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. We're on the road today and down in Hastings, Minnesota at Lock and Dam Number 2, which is taken care of by the St. Paul District of the Army Corps of Engineers. And joining me now to talk about that is Kristen Moe, Mississippi River Project Manager. Kristen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Kristen, I'm excited today to learn a little bit about only a small part of what the Corps of Engineers do. We've had the commanders on the show a number of times over the years and talk about all of the things they do, from permitting to recreation and so forth. But on the show today, we want to focus on the river, navigation on the river, the lock and dams, and then the second half of the show we recorded earlier down from southern Minnesota aboard the Dredge Getz, and that's going to be pretty interesting. But first off, I want to talk to you, Mississippi River Project Manager. What does that mean? What's your job?
Well, my job as the Mississippi River Project Manager is to ensure that we have safe and reliable navigation on the Upper Mississippi River. And that means that we are maintaining our navigation channel to a 9-foot depth so that we can allow commercial traffic on the Upper Mississippi River, and it also includes the operation and maintenance of 13 locks and dams in the St. Paul District, all the way from Minneapolis to Guttenberg, Iowa.
And in the second segment of today's show, we're going to talk about Lock and Dam Number 2, and that's where we are today here in Hastings, Minnesota. But first, historically, before we had roads and before we had cars and all those things, the river was the navigation system for the United States. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of folks don't think about that anymore, but there's some recreational use of the river, and there's a lot of commerce that happens on the river. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. The St. Paul District actually is one of the most highest in the whole country for recreating. As you know, this is a beautiful area, and we have a lot of recreational boats out on the river year-round until the river freezes over. We also have commercial navigation within our district, starting typically in March, April timeframe every year, and that will run into late November, early December, until the river freezes over. And during that time, we're transporting over 10 million in tons of. During that time, we'll see. One moment. during that time, we'll have over 17 million tons of commodities transported in and out of our district.
Kristen, I grew up in Minneapolis and in Minnesota, and we've always heard about dredging the river to make sure that the channels are deep enough so that commerce can get through there, and you hear about barge traffic. But I don't think we talk much about what really goes up and down the river. And here in Minnesota, this is ag country. Our agricultural products, one of the major products that go through down the river on barges?
Yes, absolutely. Within the St. Paul District, our highest commodities that are going downbound, that's leaving the district, going south, are corn and soybeans. And then the commodities that we typically see coming up are maybe crude materials like salt or concrete and some coal, other materials like that we need up here in the Midwest to function every day.
Okay, and then on the river system, because it flows downstream and the water keeps going that way all the way, when boats and barges have to come upstream, say they're coming from St. Louis and they're coming up the Mississippi, you've got a series of locks and dams. What's the purpose of the locks and dams?
The locks and dams were put in place back in the 1930s to basically allow navigation to create a deep enough pool for barges and commercial tows to come upriver. So you think of it, basically behind every dam, a pool is created that's allowing adequate depth for that boat to move through.
So every time you dam up the river, you create this pool behind the dam, and if somebody's coming upriver, they have to get on a different level of the river in order to continue their journey.
Yes.
So it's a step up or a step down?
That's absolutely correct. It is a series of steps going up as you transit upriver.
And opposite going the other way.
And opposite going the other way.
Now, I was looking at your website, and I understand that across the nation, coal is the largest commodity that's moved on the waterways, then petroleum, and then another large group, and of course in Minnesota, it's grains and other farm products. Mm-hmm. But we get into that a little bit, and we start comparing the cost of transporting goods by truck or by rail or by barge, and there's a significant difference in the cost.
Yes, that's absolutely right. The statistics say that about a gallon of fuel will allow 1 ton of cargo to be shipped 59 miles by truck, 202 miles by rail, and 514 miles by barge. So as you can see, shipping by barge is very cost-effective and efficient for our nation's goods.
And not only that, there's some other statistics up here. They say a single 15-barge tow, that's where they hook 15 mm-hmm. barges up and they go, is equivalent to about 225 rail cars or 870 trailer trucks. That's a huge difference.
It's amazing. And within our district, you'll see tows anywhere from 12 to 15 barges. So it's very representative of our area.
We're speaking with Kristen Moe, the Mississippi River Project Manager from the St. Paul District Army Corps of Engineers on Minnesota Military Radio. Kristen, I think most of the people in Minnesota don't think too much about the Mississippi River other than going for a boat ride. But the commerce on the river is hugely important and way cheaper to ship by barge than it is to send it by truck or by rail. That's amazing.
It sure is.
And, of course, that's one of your goals is to make sure that the river is open, it's available. It's at least 9 feet deep so those barges can get through. And then, of course, you have to maintain the locks and dams. Is there a steady rotation of maintenance that's done up and down the Mississippi River every year? Are you fixing something every year at one of the locks and dams?
Yes, absolutely we are. We do have an in-house fleet of maintenance personnel that rotate throughout the district, and they'll be working at various locks every year. And we also have contracts that we put out where we'll have contractors working at our locks. We do have a significant backlog maintenance for the district, as you can imagine, with infrastructure that's, 90 years old. It needs some work. So we're constantly, looking to get additional funding so we can do some of those major repairs.
So as you indicated earlier, some of these were created in the 20s, and a lot of them were created right after World War II. Mm-hmm. Is there how much work do you have to do to make that go on for the next 100 years?
Boy, well, as I mentioned, we have this backlog, and every year it grows. So it's hard to quantify it. We just know that we have to do a great job to prioritize that work so we can buy down the risk in order to ensure that our infrastructure is available every day for commercial traffic and our rec users.
I'm curious how you pay for that, because there's a steady dose of maintenance has to be done. Mm-hmm. I know that you've got the dam here, and you create some electricity that you sell to the local power authority. The barges pay some fees when they go through, and then is the rest of it funded by the federal government?
Yes, the daily operation and maintenance of our facilities is funded by the federal government. And yes, we do have agreements with some local organizations as far as to produce hydropower, such as here at Lock 2. And then, as you mentioned, the commercial navigation industry does pay into the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. But those projects are selected. They don't necessarily it doesn't necessarily come back to our district per se directly, you know, unless it's through a specific project sometimes.
But all part of the budget.
It's all part of the overall budget.
And, of course, the United States Congress created the Corps of Engineers, and they provide annual funding for to make sure that the waterways all across the nation are accessible and 9 feet deep so that we can get those barges through.
Absolutely.
All right, Kristen, I've enjoyed talking to you today. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, I just want to stress the importance of our inland navigation and the importance of connecting, especially here, connecting the Midwest to the global marketplace and making sure that our goods produced here in the Midwest are out there for the world.
Thank you for joining us today. And for our listeners, stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk to the Lockmaster for Lock and Dam Number 2 in Hastings, Minnesota. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Today we are in Hastings, Minnesota at Lock and Dam Number 2, which is part of the job of the St. Paul District, the Army Corps of Engineers, to take care of. And I'm joined today by Brian Gray, who is the Lock and Dam Lockmaster here in Hastings. Brian, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
Brian, I understand you served in the military.
I did. I served in the U.S. Navy. I was an aircraft mechanic stationed in San Diego and traveled to the Pacific on 2 WestPac cruises.
All right. Well, congratulations on serving in the Navy. You're the Lockmaster here in Hastings. How long have you been? How did you get the Army Corps of Engineers, and how long have you been here?
It's hard to explain how I got to the Army Corps of Engineers. I was 20 years aircraft mechanic at Northwest Airlines. Ended up in a career change. I was going back to school, and the Corps of Engineers likes to recruit in the trade schools. They came in and interviewed me, and I started here as a lock operator.
So they figured if you could fix an aircraft, you probably could handle a lock.
Correct.
All right. Now, we hear all the time about locks and dams on the river, and there's many of them here in Minnesota. We talked about that in the first segment. We're sitting at Lock and Dam Number 2 in Hastings, Minnesota. And can you describe to our listeners, what does that mean? What is this? I see a dam. You're damming up the river.
We have a 700-foot dam. It's got 19 gates on it. Each gate is 20 by 30 foot. Our job is to control the elevation of the pool, meaning the elevation upstream of our lock, which starts here in Hastings and goes up to St. Paul. We maintain that at a certain elevation so it maintains the 9-foot channel for the tow industry to travel on.
So you've essentially, sometime way in the past, they built this dam across the Mississippi River. And from here back to St. Paul, Minnesota, that is your pool, and you maintain the level of the river from here to St. Paul.
That is correct.
Okay, and then when in the spring you get a big runoff, you've got to let some of that water through, and can you generate some electricity from the dam as well?
When we get into high water, actually the hydro plant will close down. They need to have that head, and as we get high water, we lose that head. The water becomes level on both sides, so it can't produce the electricity. So they need it when we have, right now we have a 12-foot head, meaning our upstream is 12 foot higher than the downstream. That's when they can produce the most electricity in that hydro plant.
So in the spring, if you get a heavy runoff, you're going to let that water go.
Correct.
But for most of the rest of the year, you control the level, and you actually generate some electricity that you sell to the local power authority.
That is correct.
Okay, so we've maintained that level, and because of the dam and other locks and dams downstream, that's, as you said, that changes the level of the river. So when boats or barges need to pass by Hastings, you use the lock system to allow them to go up or down, whether they're going downriver or coming back upriver?
That's correct. We have a lock. It is 600 feet long by 110 foot wide. An example would be a 15 barge tow that's coming upstream. They will drive into our lock chamber. We can take 9 of those barges at one time. So they will have to break the tow apart, and then the tow boat backs out with 6 of those barges and ties off on our downstream wall. Then we close the lock chamber, and by allowing the river to flow in from the upstream side into our lock chamber, we will raise our lock chamber 12 foot. Once it's at that elevation, we open our upstream gates and we have an hydraulic winch that will grab that front barge and pull all nine of them out at the same time.
And then you reverse the process and allow the other barges and the tow to move in there and do it again.
Correct. We'll go back down, get the six barges with the tow boat. Our chamber's big enough to take them in. We'll raise the lock chamber back up. They will put the tow back together, and off they go up to St. Paul. That is about a two-hour process.
Now, if you've got, did you say nine barges will fit in the lock?
Correct.
Does that fill it up pretty well?
It fills it up really well. It's a typical nine-barge flotilla is 105 foot wide. Our lock chamber is 110, so you have approximately 2.5 feet on each side. They will bump up against our walls. It's okay. The walls are built to take that. They can withstand that. The nine barges are also almost 600 feet long, which totally fills our lock chamber.
Not much room for error there.
Not at all.
Okay, and then you pull the second one through, put them back together, and off they go on their journey. And if they're coming downriver, you just reverse that process.
When we take it and we take the nine barges into our chamber and they're headed downstream, so we separate the tow, they back up, tie off on our long wall on the upstream side, and then we lower the chamber, and then we use our upstream valves to allow some of the river to come into our lock chamber and actually push those nine barges out on their own.
They flush them out into the river.
And we flush them out, and they hug our wall all the way down, and then there'll be a deckhand on the stern of that last barge, and we grab his line, throw it on a pin, and then it's his job to stop those nine barges.
So you hold them and wait till the rest of it gets there. They hook it back up again, and off they go.
And off they go.
We're speaking with Brian Gray, who is the Lock and Dam 2 Lockmaster on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Brian, we heard that the lock and dam system, it's not new. It's been here for quite some time. How do you maintain it? How do you keep it going year after year?
It's a constant job. Every day we have work orders. We have a maintenance system. We do things on a periodic basis as far as greasing, changing things out based on the number of cycles it's gone through. In the wintertime when we're not navigating, sometimes we'll have to build a shelter out there and have heat pumped in so that we can do a major overhaul on a certain piece of equipment that needs it. So we are constantly doing maintenance here.
I think you told me that you just put, are they called gates? You just put new gates on it recently?
We had new gates installed this summer. This lock chamber was built started in 1948. So those gates were about 60 years old. They had cracks in them. They'd been welded, and the welds had been welded. So they were old and tired and fatigued, and they needed to be changed.
And I think when we took the tour, you told me that in a few years, 3 to 5 years from now, you're going to, in the middle of the winter, you're going to dewater the lock and dam. Can you explain to me what that means?
Basically, you put a wall on the upstream side of the lock chamber and a wall on the downstream side of the lock chamber, and you pump all the water out of it, and you have approximately a 600-foot, think of it like a football field. It's just, you go 30 foot down, it's just wide open area, and they'll do concrete work. They'll jack up the gates. They'll inspect them. They'll replace anything that needs to be done. Just refurbish it. It's a winter job. It's all done during the winter from basically the beginning of December until about mid-March. And then you need to be done by mid-March so that you're ready for the navigation season.
Okay, so you've got to do that in the cold weather during the winter and get your guys out there to fix anything you find.
Correct.
You ever found anything strange on the bottom of that? I know you weren't here for it, but you've heard some stories.
Well, I've heard stories where you find some wires from the tow boats or perhaps some jewelry or some knickknacks that have fallen off of pleasure boats over the years. It's always a surprise what you see.
Well, it'll be fun to see we'll have to let the Corps of Engineers let us know when they're doing that. We'll come down. As long as you keep me warm, we'll come down and see what's going on. We just got a couple of minutes left, Brian. We've talked about the commerce and the barges, but Mississippi River is a place where a lot of people like to come and fish and play. So there are recreation vehicles coming through the lock and dam system as well. Do they go through for free?
They do. We'll take one canoe, we'll take a kayak, it doesn't matter. All they have to do is call us, and we're here 24/7. We'll take them any time of the day.
And in the busy part, I suppose in July when there's a lot of recreational traffic, Can you? You must be able to fit quite a few recreational boats in that system.
We've had, think of it as a 600-foot long wall on both sides. We've had them totally covered with boats, so you can have hundreds of boats in there at one time. Pleasure boats.
That sounds like pandemonium to me, Brian.
It can be. You have to have a sense of humor and be a little firm if need be.
Okay, the last question for you. I got to tease this because the next couple of segments we are actually going out on the dredge gets. Two parts of the river, the lock and dam system, allows traffic to go upriver and downriver, but the river has to be open and 9 feet deep. So there's a never-ending job to get the dredge out there and get that excess material out.
Certainly is. We think of it as all one team. We all have our different jobs, but we're all one team keeping the river moving and everything on it moving.
And you must have had the dredge come through your lock and dam, too.
I have not seen them up here in my time here. I've been here 16 years, and I have not seen the dredge up here.
But it looks like they'd fit.
They're pretty busy downstream.
They are busy downstream. Well, Brian, thanks for taking the time to meet with us today. I didn't know what a lock and dam lockmaster did, and appreciate the tour today. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Tom.
That was Brian Gray, the lock and dam number 2 lockmaster, part of the St. Paul District, the Army Corps of Engineers. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going aboard the Dredge Gets and learn about dredging the river to keep it open for commerce.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to visit with the Army Corps of Engineers about dredging the river. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is committed to reducing the impact of the agency's operations on the environment and society. Here at MDVA, we have several practices that have been implemented throughout the agency to reach our sustainability goals. Our sustainable practices impact energy, water, waste, and fleet planning. Firstly, we begin with the education of the MDVA staff through monthly trainings. MDVA, along with the other agencies, have modestly reduced fossil fuel consumption by over 700,000 gallons through recent purchases of more efficient vehicles such as gas-powered hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and all-electric vehicles. We plan to install electric vehicle charging station at our Minneapolis home as our first commitment to electrifying our light fleet. As a whole, state agencies have reduced energy intensity per square foot through over 308 documented energy conservation measures. To reduce waste, we are expanding organic recycling on our Minneapolis campus. All these plans and practices help MDVA get closer to a more sustainable future.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
Joining me now is Brian Krause, who is the master of dredge gets and handles the crew and day-to-day dredging operations on the Mississippi River for the St. Paul District of the Corps of Engineers. And, Brian, nice to see you today. Thanks for the tour. We're somewhere on the Mississippi River. Can you explain to our listeners, where are we? We're southern Minnesota somewhere.
Yes, thanks for having us here. We are in between Minnesota, Minnesota, and Buffalo City, Wisconsin, on the Mississippi River.
So that's roughly 2.5 hours south of Minneapolis.
Pretty close, yep.
And you picked us up on the Wisconsin side of the river and gave us a little tour. I think most people in Minnesota and Wisconsin have heard about dredging the river since they were little people and growing up. And we're out here, and you've got a fleet of boats. You've got all kinds of equipment. Can you tell us about how many people here and what kind of equipment you've got and the fact that you run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
Yes, we have, when we're dredging 100%, we have about 56 employees that work a 24/7 operation, 7 days on, 7 days off, 12-hour shifts, and we're just keeping the channel open.
And, of course, with all those people, if they're on for 7 days, you've got a galley and you've got sleeping quarters and you've got laundry, you've got everything they need for 7 days a week.
Yes, even DirecTV, too. It's just it's like home or a hotel. A lot of people call it the floating hotel is in the area again. And at nighttime, it just kind of lights up like our own little city.
Only difference is it's right in the middle of the river.
That's right, yep.
Okay, and we met, you've got a Marine Corps lady that takes care of feeding all the crew, and she looks like she's feisty enough to take care of all those guys and keep them fed.
Oh, yes. That is a major part of the day-to-day job is serving the meals. Very good home-style meals, home-cooked meals. She is our cook steward of our whole galley crew, which consists of five folks that constantly feed and clean.
And, Brian, can you describe these barges you've got now? We're sitting in the barge where you've got the galley and the sleeping quarters and so forth, and it's attached to another barge over here, and you've got tugboats, and you've got regular boats for going up and down the river. You've got a lot of equipment out here.
Yes, there is a lot of equipment. Besides our vessels, our main vessels, we have approximately 70 different pieces of equipment, main equipment, besides the equipment that's on each pontoon or barge. It takes a lot of maintenance. We have a whole engineering staff of 9 folks that keep and maintain our 300-plus engines between gas and diesel. It's definitely a full-time job.
And each of these big barges that serve as your home and your office and so forth has, what did you call the spikes that go in and holds them in place on the river?
The spuds.
Spuds.
Yep.
And so they're pretty secure in the spot that you want them to be in. But then I suppose with every piece of the job as you move down the river dredging, then you've got to periodically keep moving along with the job.
That's right, yes. And as this job progresses upstream, we will move their quarters barge a little bit closer. So the commute from the Taggetts, the quarters barge, to the dredge stays fairly short.
Okay, Brian, I want to talk about logistics for a minute. You've got 56 people, and they all have to eat, and they have to sleep, and they have to use the facilities. And how do you keep this thing going? There's a lot of fuel. There must be a lot of logistics, a lot of supplies arriving every day.
There is a lot of supplies every day between our own crew members delivering our supplies, going and getting them and bringing them to the boat, or our vendors bringing them right to us, or our groceries. They come once a week, and it is a lot. It's
something going on every day.
Every day, yes.
And, of course, the main job is to get the dredging and take care of the river so it's open for commerce. And we've talked earlier on the show about that and all the traffic on the river, which is amazing. Does that barge traffic ever interfere with your dredging and with what with your quarters here in these barges?
Well, when we get to a job, we make sure that the quarters is plenty out of the channel and it's safe from any vessel that is commuting the channel within the buoys, especially industries, towboats, barges. We want to make sure that our crew and equipment is as safe as we can keep it.
We're speaking with Ryan Krause, who is the master of the dredge gets out on the Mississippi River. Sergeant Ben and I are out on the river and had a big tour of all these facilities out here. The St. Paul District, the Army Corps of Engineers, has the main job of keeping the river open for commerce. And how often now on the dredging operations, do they go from early spring to late fall, or do they what months of the year are you going and what months of the year are you down?
The last few years, we've been averaging heading out dredging for our first job in mid to late April, and we usually dredge right up until it's normally about Thanksgiving when we finally pull back into our port in Fountain City, Wisconsin.
And then you do a little maintenance and get ready for next year.
Correct, yep. A lot of maintenance.
I suppose it looks like you're out here doing some pretty heavy work, and the engines and the generators and everything else you showed us, they're huge. I'm amazed your barges don't sink right to the bottom.
That's right.
But they work, and they work well. Now, can you tell us the river? You told us on the tour you've got part of your crew that goes out and surveys the river bottom and measures the depth. Is that what they do?
That's right. We have our certain bad spots yearly that we do. That's been pretty typical over the past few years. But once in a while, we get bad spots where industries, towboats and barges, they find the spots for us, and they let our channels and harbors survey outfit know, and then they take their vessels with their equipment, and they can determine how much sand is actually there that needs to come out by us.
So you get some reports from the users, the
yes.
commerce on the river. It says, it's getting a little shallow over there. It's getting to be a problem.
That's constant on the radio, yep.
And so then you send people out and check that out.
That's right.
Now, Where does all of this come from? Does it come downstream? Does it come off the streams into the river? Does it come from Brainerd? Does it come from the shoreline? I mean, I've seen these mountains of sand that you've taken out of the river. Where does that all come from?
That's kind of a $1 million question. I mean, it comes from a little of every place that you mentioned, especially islands that are eroding away from the past years. Some of them, they talked about putting some riprap along them so it doesn't erode them, but you can't do every island. There's too much of it.
So some of that from the wakes from the barge traffic that's pushing stuff up and down the river, and it hits the shoreline, and some of that sand just falls back into the water?
Yes, it's mainly from flooding. That has a lot to do with it. When it floods, the water runs right through the middle of the island, and the island starts diminishing, and it only has one place to go, and where the channel's flowing.
Now, the stuff that you're dredging out of the river looks like it's pretty clean. Is there any hazardous material in there? Is it usually pretty just sand?
Generally around here, it's very clean, like mentioned on the way in. We've supplied a lot of sandbox sand for kids, a lot. And my son was one of them, and I probably was too when I was growing up.
Now, you showed us where you're pumping the sand up onto an island. Is this one of the chronic spots that you come to every year? It looks like you've been filling in that island for more than just this year.
Yes, for sure. This is definitely a yearly or once in a while and every other year job.
So are there quite a few of those spots that are chronic that you have to go back to each year?
Dozens of them, yep.
So how much material do you think you take out of the river in a season?
In a season, it averages from 800,000 yards to 1 million cubic yards of sand.
That's a lot of sand. We're speaking with Brian Krause, master of the dredge gets, out on the Mississippi River down in southern Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. We have to take a short break. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Brian Krause, who is master of the dredge gets for the St. Paul District of the Army Corps of Engineers. And we're out in the middle of the Mississippi River, and we're in one of the break rooms here. And Brian, I wanted to ask you told me on the tour that you actually grew up in this part of the state and in this part of the river. Is that true?
Yes, actually, I grew up right where I picked you up at the boat ramp.
Okay.
In Buffalo City, Wisconsin. And I've been in Winona, Minnesota for quite some years, but it's all generally the same area.
So did you grow up on the river fishing and playing in the water and doing all those things?
I sure did, yes. Sandbarring and fishing just about every day.
And how long have you been with the Army Corps of Engineers?
It was 24 years this March.
So you really know this part of the Mississippi River like the back of your hand.
I'd like to say that, but after seeing all these new sandbars with as low as the water is, it's getting pretty interesting.
So has it changed a lot in all those years?
It has changed drastically, yes.
What do you think the change is? Does the river just keep twisting and turning? Does it fill in areas and then you have to clean out the other areas? What changes?
Yes, a lot of it is when you get flooding, you get a lot of current. And that current moves the material around so much that it's almost unpredictable where it's going to end up.
Now, you're kind of fortunate, I think, in your job this year because we've had a bit of a drought. The river is low. Probably is a little easier to do the dredging when things are settled down a little bit.
Absolutely. The worst part about it is we're wanted in about five different places at the same time now.
Well, everybody's got hot spots, and so you've got to clean this one up and get to the next one.
That's right.
Now, you started here. You showed us the plans where you're going up around this island. What did you call this island where you're putting the sand?
This island is called Lost Island.
Lost Island. And there's a whole kind of a part of the channel that you're dredging out. Tell us, how does that work step by step? First, you measure the depth of the water, and then you determine where you're going to go.
Yes. Before we even are on our way here, our survey crew finds the sand here. So we know where we're going to go before we leave our last job. Once we get there, we have a safety meeting with the crews that are getting ready to come on because every job is a little bit different, even though we're doing the same thing. There's just different locations of things, and we start setting up our job according to our plans, and we start dredging.
And you've got one rig up at the front that you said kind of goes back and forth side by side, and when it's down there, it's scooping up. Or does it scoop up or does it suck up the sand? How do you get the sand?
Yes, it's a 5-foot diameter auger that spins up the sand, gets it loose, and then it's suction from the main pump that sucks it through all the pipeline.
And then you set up on these pontoons this pipeline that goes all the way back behind that rig and up and over the hill so that you can pump the sand into that island.
That's right. We have a 20-inch diameter steel and plastic pipeline, and on a very, very good day, we could pump 10,000 yards of sand a day.
Now, we saw when we arrived here this morning that they were adding some sections to that pipe so that they could keep moving down the river. Do they have to shut down for a while and then add some sections and then get ready to just creep down the river as they're going back and forth? Is that how that works?
Yes. Depending on the pipeline length, generally it takes about 30 minutes to an hour to add a 500 or 250-foot section of pipe.
And then that piece of equipment runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
Yes, and that'll probably happen 24-7 until mid to late November.
All right. And this particular job, how long is it going to take you to clear out that part of the channel?
We just got here on Sunday. We got going on Monday. We'll be here for about a week and a half.
And the object here is to make sure that you've got at least 9 feet of water?
Correct.
And do you take it down a little lower when you can, or what's the...
Yes, and that's also up to survey, because that determines how much sand we put into our holding area.
And, Brian, I thought it was interesting when you showed us around the back of the island where you're putting all that sand, there's a bulldozer back there pushing it up to the sides, and the water's running in and the sand's running in, and you have quite an operation just to make sure that you don't fill in that spot.
Correct, yes. We try to keep the material as far up the site as we can just for future use.
So your average day on the dredge, I know that you've got in a galley, I saw there's breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then there's some snacks for the night crew and so forth. Do you get into a rhythm? Do you get into a battle rhythm like when Ben goes over to Kuwait?
Absolutely, yes. We are very time sensitive because of the shift changes. So during meal times, everybody knows they have to be right on point in order to relieve their person.
All right. We're talking to Brian Krause, master of the dredge gets. He handles the crew and the day-to-day dredging operations for the St. Paul District, the Army Corps of Engineers. And we're out on the river. Sergeant Ben, I never thought you'd get me down this part of the state and out on the river. But it's been fascinating. A lot of heavy equipment, and it's a lot bigger operation than I ever dreamed. You've been with this for a long time. How many years did it take you to get to be master of the dredge?
Oh, good question. It took about 19 years. I started as a deckhand and worked my way up.
So you've worked every position all the way up?
Just about everyone.
And is this your favorite position?
Yeah, I would say it is.
Too much responsibility.
It is a lot of responsibility, but the more I'm in it, the more I'm really enjoying it.
So while you're out here and you're doing this dredge work, the barges are still going by. We saw some houseboats that were pushed up on the shore. I imagine there's fishing boats. Do you ever have any interference from fishermen or pleasure seekers or even the commercial traffic?
Yes, we've had some interesting ones. Just last week when we were up by Elmo, Wisconsin, we had a towboat run aground, and we had to shut the... We didn't shut the channel down. It was kind of a mutual thing between industry and the Coast Guard until we could clean up the mess and proceed to move traffic.
So did you stand by on that, or were you instrumental in helping clean that up?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, both ways. Now, we've got just a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to ask you, I think every time I've talked to the commander of the Corps of Engineers, that he's just like the Minneapolis VA, they're hiring. Is the Corps of Engineers hiring, and do you need people out here on the dredge?
We are constantly hiring. USAjobs.gov is the best place to go. And whenever you see dredge gets, that's where we'll be. It explains the position. And like I said, we are constantly hiring throughout the year.
Now, you shut down for a couple of months in the winter, but do your crews come back season by season?
Yes. Yep.
And then for 2-3 months in the winter, they go ice fishing, I'm guessing.
Pretty much.
If they're not doing the maintenance on the equipment.
That's right.
So is it safe to say that the people that love the river probably love doing this? They're on for a week and then they're off for a week, and they've got a couple months off in the wintertime. Sounds like a pretty good gig.
Yes, and even when they get laid off, they still have a deployment opportunity for hurricane cleanup or several other things going on, like when they had the wildfires, they go and assist, and some were gone for 5 months at a crack.
So just as we've heard from the commander, when there's trouble down in Louisiana, if there's trouble somewhere else in the United States, if they're looking for people, your guys can volunteer and say, I'd like to go down there for a couple of months.
Absolutely.
Well, that's a pretty good way to fill in a little time in the wintertime, too. Any final thoughts about the dredging operation in the Mississippi River? I'm happy that we finally got an opportunity to come see it. It's a lot bigger job than I ever imagined.
Yes, no, that's good. That's always to hear good feedback, and it's always good to have you guys come out like this and learn it yourself and have other people understand it a little bit more.
Well, you're keep up the good work out here, and hopefully we can find you some good workers to join you. And thank you very much for the tour today. It's been a pleasure, and keep up the good work.
All right, thank you. We appreciate it.
That was Brian Krause, Master of the Dredge Gets, part of the St. Paul District Army Corps of Engineers from the river down in southern Minnesota with Sergeant Benton.
We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests from the St. Paul District, the Corps of Engineers, for joining us this week. Kristen Moe, Brian Gray, Brian Krause, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week for another edition of the show coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota Military Radio.com.